Prescott against Great Wolf Resorts. Mr. Conley.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This appeal concerns the application of language in an indemnification clause which requires the buyer to indemnify any claim resulting from acts, omissions, or events occurring on or after the closing date. Some 7 years after the closing date, the buyer refused to indemnify the sellers for a contribution claim the buyer brought after being sued by the plaintiffs, Dr. and Mrs. Foskett, arising out of a waterslide accident. That accident itself occurred almost 6 years after the sale. Whether one looks to the accident itself or the Foskett's lawsuit arising out of that accident, the act or event resulting in the contribution claim, for which our client now seeks indemnification, clearly both occurred after the closing date, within the meaning of Section 10.2 of the Asset Purchase Agreement. The buyer here would have this court look instead at the alleged pre-closing act, which, as alleged, was a defective design or construction of the water slide itself. There are a number of problems with that alternative approach. Until the accident, there was no injury, and under Wisconsin law, there was no claim. No claim resulted from the act of the design or construction of the water slide. Certainly not the claim that's at issue here. Moreover, Section 10.2 indemnifies the sellers for claims resulting from acts, omissions, or events. So even if the original act of design or construction of the water slide may have been part of the claim itself clearly also depended on an event, and since the language is alternative under the contract, it should be covered. Finally, and perhaps most fundamentally for this purpose, the buyer never proved that the seller committed any act. It alleged a design or a construction defect, but it never proved anything. And in fact, on summary judgment, conceded that the only evidence was that our client owned the water slide at the time it was designed, constructed, and first operated. On appeal, the buyer does not attempt to dispute the plain application of the language. Instead, as I review the briefs, I think they're arguing that the context of the entire agreement is somehow inconsistent. And there again, I don't think the inconsistencies are borne out by any other language in the agreement. The buyer received a limited window of 18 months from closing itself under a related indemnification clause. And the buyer's sole remedy for pre-closing liabilities ended after that period. That's certainly consistent with the notion that the sellers are the ones who get the long-standing protection under the asset purchase agreement. Indeed, in Section 10.2, it's the seller who has the continuing right to seek indemnification for certain disclosed liabilities, as well as those liabilities resulting from acts, omissions, or events occurring on or after the closing. This division of indemnification rights strikes me, at least, as wholly consistent, and indeed as consistent with the as-is provision of the contract itself. The argument that somehow an allocation of liabilities is inconsistent would depend on your believing that the mere act of having once owned the property means that any future claims arising out of, at least in part, future events was a inchoate liability which was covered in the contract. And the contract is very much the opposite. It talks about liabilities which are, make sure I use the language, asserted or unasserted, known or unknown. It does not say existing or non-existing liabilities. There simply wasn't a liability here to allocate, and therefore there was nothing inconsistent in the language. As I'm happy to answer questions, if there are any from the bench. Otherwise, I just reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. According to your interpretation of the contract, Wouldn't Great Bear be liable for a claim arising from an accident that happened the day after the closing, even if it resulted from Black Wolf's negligence? Would Great Bear agree to that kind of arrangement?
Actually, Your Honor, it has 18 months to seek indemnification itself for pre-closing acts. So there would be a claim for indemnification. However, you're right that to the extent the accident occurred after the closing, that was a risk that they undertook because it would be a claim that resulted from it. There are two things that would protect them under Wisconsin law. One is that there would at least be a more difficult case than is presented here because there would be actual evidence of negligence. I take it in the 24 hours that Great Bear would have owned the facility, they wouldn't likely have been the cause of the accident to the extent that there was a cause related to the facility. Also, as I say, there's this indemnification clause which may interact with that, with a stricter construction that would apply in that case. But frankly, Your Honor, if you look at the contract language, that's what they agreed to. They agreed to claims arising afterwards being theirs, claims which resulted from acts, events, or omissions being ours, Black Wolf's. And the parties, you know, take that risk every day. When you buy an automobile and you get in an accident the next day, you're responsible for the accident. To the fact that somebody else owned it the day before that doesn't really change the fact that you're responsible for the accident as the owner of the car.
Now, the liability section of the agreement sets out a list of liabilities that Great Bear assumed in the transaction. Are you arguing now that we should read this agreement as saying Great Bear assumed all of Black Wolf's tort liability?
No, on the contrary. Any tort liability that existed at the time, if there had been an accident that predated the sale, known or unknown, asserted or unasserted, as it says in Section 2.1, though all of that would have continued to stay with the seller, Black Wolf. It's only those liabilities which didn't exist and could not be allocated. If you look at the language of Section 2.1, as I said, Your Honor, it doesn't say existing or non-existing liabilities. It's allocating liabilities as they existed at the time. This was not a liability. Taking a step further, I suppose conceivably if it had been proven, and it was not, but if it had been proven that the water slide did not comply with codes or regulations, and the government came back later and said you're being fined for the operation of a water slide which was out of compliance, that would have been a liability for that period of time that our client owned it that they would have been responsible for. But the liability section doesn't say anything about in perpetuity that we're responsible for anything. And in fact, if you think about it, as a matter of policy, it would be an odd result that in perpetuity a seller should be responsible for future accidents, for anything they owned and wasn't physically changed by the buyer. Indeed, although it's not part of this record, if there were accidents that had occurred afterwards, you would want to give an incentive to the buyer to fix the situation before there was a devastating accident, as was claimed here by Dr. Foskett. So not only is it not called for in the contract, but it's not called for as a matter of policy. And does that answer your question, Your Honor? Anything more? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Connolly. Mr. Giftas.
May it please the court. The sellers here, Black Wolf, are seeking indemnification from Great Wolf, reimbursement from Great Wolf.
Could you just use the term seller and buyer?
Sure.
With all the wolves and bears and greats and lessers, Otherwise, things get confusing.
The sellers are seeking indemnification from the buyer in this case, and they are seeking reimbursement from the buyer of their settlement costs of the buyer's direct contribution claim against the seller. They're seeking indemnification from the buyer for their defense costs of defending the direct contribution claim against the seller. There's a few key facts that are important to put all this in context. The seller was involved in the design and construction of the Tree Wolf water slide when it owned the water park in 1998. It didn't sell the water park to the buyer until 1999, after the slide had been constructed. Dr. Foskett's, the plaintiff's injury, allegedly occurred in 2006, at which time Dr. Foskett brought a claim against the buyer, alleging claims premised on the fact that there was a flawed design and construction in the water slide, that it wasn't built to code and rendered unreasonably dangerous. Because the buyer had no involvement in the design and construction of the water slide, it in turn brought a contribution claim against the seller. Because the seller was responsible for the design, the seller should therefore be responsible for the liability. At issue here is, what did the parties intend their indemnification rights to be under the asset purchase agreement? And in particular, the sellers are claiming that they have a right under 10.2C because a third-party injury and even a third-party lawsuit that happened after closing is sufficient to be an event, as the parties intended that term to mean in 10.2C. And that simply does not make sense under the reading of the contract as a whole. In particular, the contract states, and what it does is it renders the buyer's indemnification rights essentially meaningless here. The buyer has indemnification rights at 10.1, the seller at 10.2 under the contract. 10.1D states that the buyer has the right to indemnification when there's claims asserted against the buyer that arise out of a pre-closing act, omission, or event. It can't be disputed that the building of the slide that resulted in injury to Dr. Foskett was an act covered pre-closing that would trigger...
Isn't that an unresolved question, whether the design and construction of the slide were culpably negligent?
I think what we have here is a situation where the sellers are trying...
That question can be answered yes or no. Isn't it an open question whether the design or construction of the slide was culpably negligent?
I believe that is an open question, yes.
Well, then the next question is, why would this case be resolved without answering that question?
Because
if, in fact, the slide was properly designed, is non-negligent, what's the basis for sticking the seller with liability?
All the claims brought against the buyer are premised on the fact that the slide was, in fact, negligent. And the claims that the buyer brought against...
You know, plaintiffs in tort litigation often make incorrect claims. And normally, one would say that they need to be resolved. One doesn't just assume the truth of allegations in complaints. As I say, isn't that a big problem here? The district court seems to have equated an allegation with proof. And I wonder why that's appropriate to do.
Well, why it's appropriate here is because the sellers have hinged their right to indemnification on a finding of third-party conduct. And when you read the contract as a whole, the terms act, event, and omission were intended to be limited to party conduct when they operated the water park. The buyers, at the time they moved for summary judgment, if they believed they had a basis for indemnification triggered by post-closing conduct of the buyer, they could have and should have raised it. They haven't, though. They've hinged their entire claim on a post-closing injury to a third party, and that's inconsistent with the construction of what that term means under the contract. It's inconsistent for a couple of reasons. One, the parties have allocated their risks and responsibilities in this case. This is unlike cases where all risk shifts to the buyer at the time of closing. Here, the parties expressly assumed, the buyer.
That's exactly the question I asked you, however. this contract says we, the seller, will remain liable for our own negligence. But if there's a loss and we're not negligent, then we can get indemnity. And the district court seems to have said, and I take it that's what you're defending, that it's not enough that the seller loses its right to indemnity not only if it was actually negligent, but also if anybody says it was negligent, whether it was negligent or not.
I think when the court's focusing on negligent, that's the second prong of the analysis that the seller needs to get past. The first prong is whether or not they have any indemnification rights under Section 10.2 in the first place in this case. And if you accept the construction that a post-closing event by a third party, as opposed to post-closing conduct by one of the parties in the way they've operated the park, can be a triggering event, then what you end up with here is simultaneous indemnification rights. You have both parties able to point their finger at each other from the initiation of the lawsuit and say...
You have simultaneous indemnification rights because the buyer's right is cut off after 18 months. The buyer's right, as I read this contract, would be, for example, if the slide were negligently designed, the buyer would have a right to fix it within 18 months and then bill the seller for the cost. That's the buyer's right under the indemnification clause. But there's no claim here that the buyer spent anything fixing the slide and that now wants to collect.
The 18-month provision limits the buyer's right to seek indemnification for just that period of time. However, it does not give the seller an additional indemnification right against the buyer, which is what's at issue here. All it means is that the parties allocated the risk and responsibility that each would remain responsible for their own conduct in operating the water park at the time they own it. Now, seller is always remaining on the hook for their conduct in operating the water park. That's what Section 2.2 says. It says buyer is expressly not assuming their liability with regard to a violation of a law in existence at the time of closing.
Why is there the 18-month provision then?
18 months limits the buyer's ability to seek indemnification in the case. That's all. In other words, the seller...
Isn't the theory there that after 18 months, the whatever's wrong previously can be fixed?
And
the
yes,
seller
exactly.
should not remain liable for it.
The seller should not remain liable to the buyer. The seller always remains liable to third parties. The seller always remains liable for potential injuries that result from a violation of the law. In fact, that ties in with Section 10.1F. 10.1F says that the buyer, not the seller, has a right to indemnification for claims asserted against it arising from a violation of the law that existed at the time of closing. That's exactly the facts we have here.
So the buyer becomes aware that particular ride in the park was constructed originally by the former owner in violation of Wisconsin law. He can say, I'm going to continue to run the doggone thing. Somebody bangs their head 5, 10, 15 years from now. It's not my funeral. That's your view, is that right?
Not exactly. The view is that the seller will always remain liable to the extent that it is under any claim that a third party may bring against it. There obviously would be situations there where there could be a supervening or intervening cause where a jury or trier of fact could say, seller, this is really your responsibility. But what the provision does after 18 months is limits the seller's right to say, no, I'm going to make the buyer be responsible for my liability. The parties basically did exactly what the court is saying here. The buyer has 18 months to figure out what's wrong with it and fix it. Otherwise, it can't seek indemnification from the seller. None of that impacts when the seller can seek indemnification from the buyer, and none of it impacts the seller's responsibility to remain on the hook for its own pre-closing conduct and operation of the park. And that's why 10.1F is important. 10.1F shows that this is the buyer's responsibility for when there's a claim asserted against the seller for a violation of the law that exists at the time of closing. And that's exactly the facts we have here. Yes, that right to indemnification runs out for the seller after 18 months, but to say that the buyer would always have a right to indemnification for a post-closing injury makes those indemnification rights of both the buyer and the seller triggered at the same time where both parties are staring at each other saying, you must defend me, you must indemnify me, and you must hold me harmless simply because an injury happened post-closing, simply because somebody filed a lawsuit post-closing. I have nothing further unless the court has any additional questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Giftos. Anything further, Mr. Cutley?
I'd like to just go back to the basic allegation that Seller was involved in the design and construction of the water park and therefore should be responsible for allegations that the design or construction is negligent. The statement that there was an allegation of a defect in design and construction is accurate as far as it goes. But first, there was also an allegation that the seller was negligent, or the buyer was negligent in the operation of the facility. And in fact, the seller concedes that it is responsible for that negligence. We were not sued by Dr. Foskett. We were sued by the sellers here, by the buyer. And in that circumstance, as this court said in Sutton in interpreting Wisconsin law, we need to look as to whether or not a contribution claim was brought just because there was another deep pocket and determine whether there was actual negligence. Now, in response to the court's question as to whether there was, in fact, an open question as to sellers' negligence, I believe it was conceded, as it had to be, that that question was unresolved. But in fact, it is even stronger than that. On summary judgment, the buyer conceded that sellers, that he had no evidence that sellers was negligent. Summary judgment is the time to put up or shut up. There were specific proposed findings of fact which addressed the issue. And just to briefly review them for the court, there was an absolute concession on summary judgment, and it's in the appendix at pages 15 and 17 of our brief, of Blackwolf's brief, that the Tall Pines entities simply conveyed property to Great Bear. They had nothing to do with the design or construction of the facility. Even as to Blackwolf, Great Bear admitted in the joint pretrial report to the district court, and this is quoted at page 28 of our brief, Blackwolf was not negligent in connection with the design, the construction, the installation, the maintenance, or the inspection of Tree Wolf. Finally, if you go to the proposed findings in themselves, you will see similar concessions. As a matter of fact, for purposes of this this claim for contribution, that the buyer conceded on summary judgment that there was no evidence of negligence by the sellers. And indeed, that's why they argued, and the court found below, all that was necessary was an allegation of negligence, which is exactly the proposition that this court rejected in Sutton. And for that reason, Your Honors, we would ask that this matter be remanded for entry of summary judgment in favor of sellers and the Black Wolf and the Tall Pines entities.
Thank you, Mr. Conley.
Thank you very much.
Case is taken under advisement.